Well, hello, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Danny Katz. Today, I am joined by badass babe extraordinaire Renette Senem, and I was so excited to have Renette on for a couple reasons. One being her tenure as mayor and city council member in Nevada City, and really wanting to understand her insider's experience being at the helm of a city during the very start of the whole COVID pandemic process. And these days, Renette has turned her activist attention to the realm of geoengineering. This was a super rich, juicy, meaty, value-rich conversation that I know you are going to enjoy. Before we dive in to today's conversation, I am reminding you to click that subscribe button to like, to share, to comment, as well to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com. It's the best way to ensure that we stay in touch. Also reminding you that my 11 module, one of a kind media literacy course, Pop Propaganda, which was created for homeschooled teens and is still thoroughly appropriate and delightful for parents, grown-ups, teens, all of us, is on sale now, is excited to dazzle you, to help you recognize propaganda, media manipulation, social engineering, and to fortify and resource us so that not only do we recognize these manipulations, but we are confident and filled with agency and self-authority such that we are not taking this kind of bait. We are not giving away our own power and authority to propaganda, media manipulation, or groupthink, while at the same time cultivating critical thinking, confidence, and agency. This course features 11 videos along with accompanying PDFs, links, animations, illustrations. I really went the distance to make it super fun. It is available now for immediate lifetime download. You can find it on my site, dannykatz.com. Run, don't walk, to sign up for Pop Propaganda. All right, that does it. Buckle up, prepare to enjoy my conversation with Renette Senem. Renette Senem, how are you? Great to see you.
I'm great, Danny. It's always great to see you. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm so happy to have you here. Such a badass.
I've heard bad, but I haven't heard badass for a while.
Really? I was talking about you today with, I just got a bang trim and my hairdresser is like, I've heard of Renette. She's amazing.
Oh, that's so nice. That's awesome. That's awesome. I'll take the kudos.
Well, your reputation precedes you, and I know that these days you're really working on the geoengineering deal. But before we dive into that, I'd love to go back a few years. I first heard of you when Nevada City was doing great things during the beginning of the pandemic, and I know you were mayor at that time. So I was hoping you could walk us through your history as an elected official, and then how it was being a mayor during the pandemic and what your experience was.
Well, I'm in Nevada City, California, which is Northern California in the Sierra foothills, old gold mining town. And I was raised in this county since I was 4 years old, though I've lived some other places here and there in my adult life, but you know, I'm really from here. And I have been a city council member and mayor twice, first originally in 2008 to 12, took a 4 year break, thought it was done, jumped back in again, 2016 to 2020. And I was mayor when COVID had struck. And so I'd been very, very involved in Nevada City. It was essentially, I wanted to make the world better. And the best place to start, of course, is your own community. Yep. So I've been very, very active and very engaged in, like, you know, helping launch the first organic farmers market in the county and putting together a warming shelter for the homeless and even building a fleet of micro houses on wheels for the homeless, 40 of them to wheel out into the woods. Doing spring and fall cleaning, citywide cleanings to, you know, spruce up the town. And so my love has always been Nevada City. I, you know, practically die for it. I mean, this has been a part of my life, really my whole entire life. So when COVID struck, I was already keyed into it. Early January, I started to hear about this thing called coronavirus. And for some reason, it crossed my radar online. Nobody had heard about it. And I'd never been worried about N1H1 or about SARS or any of the other flus before. But this one was like, what the hell is going on? This is different. So I started warning the county and the city saying, hey, guys, there's this thing called coronavirus. And nobody really knew much about it. And then when February came along, people became more aware of it. And then in March, they had their stay at home orders. And well, at that point in time, everything that had been public, all of our meetings have now been, you know, relegated to Zoom calls. And, you know, being the mayor there, I was trying to be as conservative as possible, but also because we just didn't know what it was. We had no idea what it was. And I was trying to be conservative in that, like, let's just be as safe as possible and, you know, kind of look at worst case scenario. How do we deal with this until we have an idea what we're dealing with? And I also was listening to, you know, like when there's a lockdown, can't go to school, can't go to church, you got to close your business. I was getting the calls. I was getting all the calls. And so.
So wait, hold on. Were you getting, was it ordered like from above that you as the mayor had to lock down Nevada City? Like.
So what it was essentially it was from the governor. And then it was our Health and Human Services in Nevada County itself. Again, mm-hmm. We're in California. And they're the ones who are basically making these mandates. And again, you know, we were trying to educate people later on, like mandates are not laws, they're not rules. They're just like, hey, we like it if you did this. And there's not constitutional law. So there's all that. And so what was interesting is because I, by that time, I'd been in the government, you know, for 8 years. And I do not consider myself a politician. I'm actually an activist. I'm a doer. I consider myself a solutionarian. I love to tackle problems. I find very, very creative solutions, and I'm a workhorse. I can get stuff done. I run circles around people. And so, that's always been my mentality, but I'm in government. And it was really great because I could really get a lot more done. And so I was very familiar with how government runs. And as soon as COVID struck, I noticed it was the CEO of the county. And what people don't realize is that all counties, cities are corporations, mm-hmm. You know, and you've got essentially CEOs. And people don't realize that our government has been corporatized. And quite sadly, I say to people, like, you know, I know you think that our government would not do anything bad to anybody, but the government you think exists in your brain does not exist any longer. It's really a criminal cabal masquerading as a government these days. Not that there aren't good people in government, that there are, but unfortunately, a lot of criminality. But what changed was that our CEO started to run everything, and the chair was kind of, you know, of the supervisor was under her, and they were essentially dictating to us what we're going to be doing. So I started asking questions. And so when the first 2 week lockdown happened, I was like, okay, I'm okay with this as long as it's just 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And if it's any longer, then I will have an issue with it, right? Because the 2 weeks is just to slow the curve and so on. And of course that continued. And then I noticed on the Zoom calls we'd have on Fridays, we would actually have the chair of the county, chairing the meeting, I should say, the county CEO, I should say, the supervisor will chair after that. And then there was a public health director, some doctors and the mayors and the city managers and stuff. And if I asked more than one or two questions, I would be told, Renette, you're getting to the blades of grass. You're asking too many questions. They would either mute me. They'd completely mute me. They would ignore me. Or they would say, wait till the end of this meeting when everyone was off. And then they would like dogpile. And when they started to say, well, you know, it's really important that we start to boost our immunity. I was like, great. Fantastic. So let's have everyone out of their homes, get them into the sunshine, so they get the vitamin D, teach them how to grow food, get their hands in the soil, eat really healthy, get some exercise. Let's do it. And I got shut down by a woman named Heidi Hall, who's now running for Congress. She's an absolute disaster. And she would shut down saying, no, like real immunity, which meant like you're all getting vaccinated. And that was, you know, by April, I was very clearly seeing that there was an agenda. The agenda was you're all getting vaccinated.
Right.
I thought that was quite remarkable, being there was still no vaccine out there. And so I was getting dogpiled, shut down, and so on. And I just also, by the way, in February, I'd won my third election for my third term. So at this point in time, we have the stay-at-home orders. They continue. And I'm being very outspoken, saying this is absolutely unnecessary. And we have other options. You know, we should be distributing vitamin C and zinc and D and da-da-da, you know, you know, forcing people into lockdown is not healthy mentally and emotionally and so on. And it's killing our economy, it's killing businesses. And we were at the county supervisor meetings every 2 weeks, you know, the front door, knocking on the door, hello, let us in. And we have a little camera where we could sit there and do our 3 minute public comment. And that was it. That was your exchange with the government. They were like behind a glass wall, you could go no further. So it was very, really very Orwellian, very weird, very unhealthy, not at all representative, not at all of the people. And then Newsom does his statewide mask mandate. Mm-hmm. And at that point in time, and I was a house painter for 35 years. So I've worn an N95 mask for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours. And ultimately it gave me what's called industrial bronchitis. Mm-hmm. And the reason why it gave me industrial bronchitis is because I would wear it when it was dirty. I wouldn't change it out. I wore it too long. I wasn't getting oxygen. So I had this constant cough at nighttime. Mm-hmm. So I knew just from personal experience that wearing an N95 mask all the time was not healthy. Mm-hmm. And most people don't realize that when you do wear N95 or surgical masks, it's generally in a completely controlled environment of like a surgical room or something like that, where they're pumping in more oxygen and more humidity. And you know, you change your masks out every half hour. The public doesn't do that. So I knew this was bull and I knew it was unnecessary. And I knew the governor did not have unilateral power to go out there and to actually force a medical device on every single person's face.
Right.
So I went down to our police chief and I said, hey, Chad, so do you plan on enforcing this statewide mask mandate here in Nevada City? And he says, well, I don't know how. It doesn't come with a penal code. I can't enforce something without a penal code. And it doesn't sound very constitutional to me. I was like, thank you very much. So I went back home and I went and I saw Peggy Hall, who now is a dear friend. She had done a great job on one of her videos showing like, this is how legislation is passed. This is how laws are made. This is what the governor can and cannot do. And I have in the past, because I am a Foghorn Funston, I have in the past at times used my social media to be very, very noisy and loud. And I had been waiting and waiting when this mask mandate came down the pipe for our leaders in California to start calling out saying, you can't do this. You can't do this. Like I was ready to see just a crescendo of outcry. And Danny, it was complete silence, and not just in California, but the entire state. And I thought, this is absolutely ridiculous. Everyone is in the fetal position and spineless. So what I did was I took that Peggy Hall video. I made a very robust statement saying governor does not have power. He's not the king. So go about your day, keep the mask off the face if you want to and breathe fresh air. And all hell broke out. So all hell broke out. And so at that point in time, you know, LA Times, Sacramento Bee, SF Gate, they're all attacking me, you know, saying don't wear your mask. I'm like, I'm really just saying the governor does not have the power to force a medical device on your face. It's an option. Right. That's it. And if you want to wear it, go to it. But, you know, I just know from experience, wearing it all the time is not good for you. Here, locally wise, I was loved and hated. It was just like, we love her, we hate her. And poor little City Hall, tiny town, right? 3,100. City Hall is tiny. They're just getting the arrows. I mean, they're in the crosshairs, right? The phone, the text. I mean, it's just all hell was breaking out. And I was then ready to take my oath for the third time come July. This mask mandate had come down in June. So I'm ready to do my, we're having a Zoom call, city council meeting, and I'm ready to take my oath for the third time. And instead I read my resignation letter and I said to the city council, I said, you're all committing crimes against humanity. And, you know, at some point we're going to come back and we're going to hold all of your feet to the fire. To the highest extent of the law, because what you're doing is unconstitutional. And for me, and people really so hated me, and this is the psychological warfare, is when they had said the mask is not for you, it's for your grandma, it's for your neighbors. And I was saying, no, 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 no. And I had given myself to this community. I mean, I'm well known for just loving this community and improving this community and dedicated. I mean, I would have died for this community. And so when I did not go along with the mask mandate, all of a sudden everyone who loved me were like, what? You, Renette? We thought we knew you. We thought you loved us. And you know, it's like such a betrayal. It's still to this day. I mean, to this day, I am the devil incarnate. In spite of all the proof, all the evidence, everything we said was 100% accurate. Not even like 99, but 100. Why? Because we went beyond the talking points. We went beyond the talking heads. We went beyond giving over our agency to other leaders. And as I said to my friends, I said, you know what, you guys, you have to understand, Fauci does not know Nevada City. He does not know your name. He doesn't care about you. And I do. I absolutely love you. And I'm not going to spend my whole entire life in the last 20 years solidly giving myself and improving upon this town and then throw you all under the bus for some people thought for my 15 minutes of fame. Like, this is not the kind of fame that I want. I will get, you know, some other fame would be lovely, but not this. So it was a real betrayal. And I gave my resignation. I read my resignation letter and I said goodbye. And at that point in time, I started something called Renette Sunim's Chew on This. And I started doing a podcast because at that point in time, in the summer of 2020, there were not a lot of podcasts. I mean, there weren't. And it was deadly silent out there. It's like, where is everybody? So I started interviewing people completely unknown, like Peter McCullough and Carrie Madej and Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. And in fact, the next January, Sherry Tenpenny and I did the 10 Mechanisms of Injury. And it was the first time anybody in the world had ever looked at what was in these vaccines, these COVID shots. They're inoculations, not vaccines, they're killers. She looked at what was in them. She did her research and we did something called the 10 Mechanisms of Injury. And it went absolutely viral. I mean, millions and millions of views instantaneously. And at that point in time, my YouTube channel was completely taken out without a warning. I was completely locked down in social media and I've been censored ever since. I mean, my Lord. So I did that. And during that time, I had some people approach me saying, would you run for governor? I'm like, oh my gosh, no. And then I kept waiting and I kept waiting for the leaders to stand up and step up and like call this stuff out. And I'm like, where is everybody? You know, we started getting some of the medical doctors and the practitioners speaking up, but it's like, where are the politicians? They're politicians. Where are the elected officials? Where's the representatives? And so I decided to run for governor and I said, look, I'll run. And it took me a few months to decide to do this, but first, no party affiliation because it's just two different wings of the same bird. I, as a former elected official, have been asking and wondering, like, once you're elected, then how do you measure your leadership and your decision making if you're on point or not? And so one of the things I realized was I did not have to figure out the measurement or the metrics myself. I just need to look back in time. And so I look back at the Six Nations of the Iroquois Confederacy and what they called the Great Law of Peace, which is essentially, if you hold up the Constitution and the Great Law of Peace, you're going to see they're one and the same. Mm-hmm. Our forefathers, including Benjamin Franklin, used to spend time with the Iroquois Confederacy. Mm-hmm. And it was from there they learned about the Great Law of Peace, and they translated that into the Constitution. The one thing they didn't really do as much was really focus on that seventh generation principle, which is every decision you make today should serve seven generations from now. And I'm like, I want my whole entire gubernatorial campaign, if I'm going to run for governor, I want to be based upon that seventh generation principle. And that's the kind of leadership I want to see, because if we're always, whether it's a small decision, an everyday decision, or a huge, you know, multi-generational decision, if you can look through the lens of the seventh generation, is this adding or is this taking away to their existence seven generations from now? We're going to serve the world really well. We're going to do good. So I ran, and the level of censorship, Danny, was, as our dear friend Jamie Arrigo can tell you, was next level. It got to a point where not only on the same morning was my Facebook, when I put in a Facebook jail, my Instagram was taken down for my gubernatorial campaign without any warning, but even Uber Ride and Uber Eats that I was using on the campaign trail sent all my money back and closed down my account, and I cannot use them to this day. It was so bad, we could not send PDFs, we could not share links. Like, on different social media platforms, it did not matter. Nobody, inside or outside of the campaign, could share anything, even in their email, about my campaign.
Who do you think was spearheading this attack against you?
You know, who knows? I mean, ultimately, I would say, you know, it's probably like the CIA kind of situation, you know, the big bankers, you know, the ones who are really the puppeteers.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I am a truth teller, and I don't mind being unpopular. I've got very thick skin and fast rebound. And, you know, and so I say to people today, like when they say, well, what do you think about Trump? Or what do you think about Bobby? Or I'm like, look at folks, this is what I know from my own experience. I'm a little guy in this big pond, and they were so afraid of me even speaking a little bit to truth and actually having a lot of good solutions. Like, you know, it was all about rebuilding the topsoil and ensuring and expanding legacy farms and healthy eating and having, you know, like victory gardens and, you know, all these different kind of things. And so I had a lot of solutions and how we can use what's called the iBank. It's infrastructure bank in California to rebuild our economy. Great freaking ideas. And so, and I was also calling out BlackRock and Blackstone and Vanguard and the bankers and the CIA and all this different stuff. So it was very clear, you know, and the pharmaceuticals, of course, it was very clear that they just wanted to shut me down. So I would, you know, whoever's in charge at that level, and it might even be Mossad, the state of Israel, seriously, I mean, my God, they certainly, it was the tail wagging the dog with them. So it could have been any of the above, but it was very clear that when we could not even send links or emails or share attachments in social media, private messages, I had never heard of that before, ever. Right. And so when I say to people, the fact that Bobby or Trump or any of them, Tulsi, any of them, or even where they are, tells me that somebody has to have some dirt on them, because there's no dirt on me. I mean, there's just like no serious dirt on me. And they don't like that. And right. So these folks at that level, they've got to have something on them. Mm-hmm. They have to. So traveled 20,000 miles in 6 months, had an extraordinary time, and really got to meet some wonderful people that I'm still connected to this day. And then after that, I started my Substack, and I've been doing my Substack. And then after that, it was 2 years ago, we had a horrendous winter here in Northern California, just catastrophic. And I had before then, for years, even while I was mayor and city council member, I was calling out geoengineering. And so I thought, you know what, I'm getting back into my geoengineering fight. I've been fighting against COVID for all these years. I'm jumping back into that track. And I started Gen 7, based on the 7th generation principle. And then I started Save Our Skies, which kind of leads us to today.
Wow. Okay. So I want to move slowly through right. the pieces. I want to start off with, so every county is a corporation along with every state, along with
every state, they are all corporatized. They're all incorporated.
And how are these? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
They're essentially businesses.
And how are these CEOs installed?
They are they're essentially hired by the county. So the county supervisors have to approve them becoming the CEO. And then they also, it's very incestuous, because essentially you have to work your way, of course, through the county to kind of get up to that position. And there's a reason for that. They want to make sure you're going to fall in line, they don't allow insiders or outsiders in. They just don't.
Yep.
So the staff kind of goes out there and they put out the call. They get all of the resumes and so on. And then, you know, they look and they make their suggestions, and the county supervisors, they rubber stamp it. And so the county supervisors these days essentially is just nothing more than smoke and mirrors. They're the ones that make you think you've got representation, but it's very, very clear. The CEO, who, by the way, the CEO in our county of like 90, 95,000 people is getting almost $500,000 a year, $450,000 a year for a tiny little, right? Even the president of the U.S. doesn't get that. Right. So it's insane. It's absolutely, it's like, you've got to be kidding me. And so the thing is, it's like a self-feeding machine, right? It has to keep growing. It's all about the bottom line and growing and expanding and making more money. And they're horrendous, because we have individuals who've been calling them out through public records requests, and they get harassed. They get harassed through helicopters flying low overhead, dropping whole swarms of drones, getting sent in the email photographs that were taken a half a mile away on the hilltop of their land. I mean, getting harassed by the county planning, you know, the department. And people will say, like, when it comes to COVID and the shots and this kind of stuff, like, our government would never do that. I'm like, but that government doesn't exist, folks. I'm talking to you from even seeing it in the inside.
Right.
It's just a facade. It's been a facade for generations. And I knew that even going in, I knew it was a facade, but I knew I could still get something done inside. And I did. So, So basically, all our states become corporations. I mean, our states, our counties and our cities have become corporations.
Mm-hmm. And were there any attempts to kind of sway you onto the, like, pro-lockdown, pro-mask side? Like, did they try to massage you, threaten you, bully you?
Well, I mean, they went full. Full tilt. There was no massaging. What they did do was, they had a prominent family, an old family, and a woman who's actually a friend of mine, also very involved in community and the arts and so on. The local union newspaper has been around for 150 years. They never allow you, if you're going to write a whole column, or let's say a letter to the editor, you can only have one person, one signature, never a couple, never a team, never an organization. It's just got one person, right? But what they did this time is when I call it the mass mandate, that is full on, full page column that was like, you know how when you come to a stop sign, you know, at a four-way stop and everyone's stopping going, no, you go first. Well, that's us. That's Nevada County. And we just do everything for everybody. And so basically what they're doing was going out and saying, you know, community, people of the community, people who care, don't deny the mask mandate. They go along with the mask mandate if you're really part of this community. But what the kicker was, and they're all talking essentially about me, because I was, right. It was very much about me, because I was the only one who's really outspoken. And what they did was this time, and it was the only one time in the whole entire 160 years of the union newspaper, they allowed more than two signatures, or more than one signature. They had a whole page of 100 people signatures. Friends of mine. People I've known since high school, decades. People I was sitting in meetings or in Zoom calls, you know, like literally Zooming like that week, friends, all signing on. Like, yeah, Renette, shut up. Sending the signal out to everyone else. Hey, y'all, you want to speak out like Renette? You're going to be dogpiled just like this. And this is going to be the 5-year anniversary this July for that, or June. And I will be calling every single one of those folks out on that signature, that signatory list, saying, let's back up 5 years. And let's talk about how what I did was very unpopular, and truth is essentially unpopular. That's when you know you're over the target. And here we are 5 years later. And you all thought I was doing this for 15 minutes of fame, or, you know, whatever, just, to, you know, just, I don't know why, because I was, you know, the devil incarnate. And, you know, this is what you did to me. And essentially you did it to every other community member too, because you're signaling to them that, you know, if you don't shut up, we're going to do what we did to Renette. We're going to do it to you. So it was awful. And that was really, and I got louder. I just got louder.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Has anyone ever apologized? Has anyone in these almost 5 years turned around and said, you were right?
I've had two different people. I've had one woman actually was on that signatory list who soon after, and she actually left the state, said, I'm so sorry. She goes, I did get a little strong-armed. I didn't really fully understand what I was signing on to. And I'm just so sorry, because I totally agree with you. I think this is all wrong. That was like 4 years ago. And then I did about a year and a half ago, I had a dear friend who went and watched one of the pandemics. We had a screening down in Southern California, and she came with me and my partner. And afterwards she was just crying. Like, she's like, did you know it was this bad back then? And we're like, yeah. And she's like, I had no idea. She had no idea the ostracization and the vilifying and all of that, like just how awful it was.
Yeah.
And she did not know about, you know, when you look at any kind of Marxist communist eras, like this is the same, you know, blueprint and, you know, book essentially. And so she actually apologized. She's my best friend in Southern California. And she did, she sincerely apologizes. I'm so sorry. I had no idea that you guys were going through this, but other than that, no. And in fact, most of those people, we don't even look at each other any longer. It's like they don't even exist. And now if somebody had said to me, hey, Renette, you want to sit down and have a conversation? I'd be, I'm game. Let's do it.
Right.
But I'm not reaching out to them. I'm not pretending they're my friends. And at this point in time, I don't really feel like I know them any longer. And I'm certainly not the same person I used to be. And you know, I did have one woman, who wrote that letter. Actually, about 6 weeks ago, 2 months ago, we were in a now private membership association bar here locally in Nevada City. And she had the audacity to come up to me, have a short conversation, which was kind of odd. She just came up to me and I was just like, whoa, that's weird. And there's a reason. And she instantly just put out her phone and she goes, let's do a selfie, and did a selfie real fast, like just whipped it out really fast. And then put it on Instagram saying, hashtag forgiveness. And I was like, wow, you have some nerve. And so I texted her a few days later and I said, yeah, I'm doing a story on this little incident, hashtag forgiveness. And I just kind of want to know, who's forgiving who and what's this about? Well, you know, finding love in our, so I'm like, great. So that hashtag forgiveness will be out in June in one of my Substacks, saying there's no forgiveness without first a conversation. Right. And while you signal to everybody that, oh, let's vilify anybody calling out these COVID lies, you certainly are not going to signal to this community that all you need to do is throw up a little photograph, hashtag forgiveness, and the job is done. It's all forgiven. We're not forgiven. People have died. People have been suicided. you know, they've suicided themselves, they've lost their jobs, their lives, their hopes, their savings. The fabric of the community has been just completely destroyed, will never recover. It's gone, it's done. The buildings are still here, but the heart of the community is gone. You know, it's like this is all of your, you all participated in this. And you participate in this probably because you all have a fear of death. Maybe perhaps you don't believe in God or a creator or whatever. I don't know what it is, but because of your fear, right, and your inability to stand up strong, this allowed the terror community to the ground. Absolutely. You might as well have had a fire come through. It's just destroyed us.
Yeah. Whew.
Yeah.
I'd like to say this is the exception, but I've heard the story so many times, although you getting two apologies is certainly more than I've experienced.
Yeah. Well, you know, they were, but I mean, it's still sorely missed. I mean, it's, you know, I still see my friends walking down the street and they have their little baskets and they're going to the farmer's market I started, you know, I'm going to enjoy the farmer's market I started, you know, or I'll see, you know, oh, you know, we have the warming shelter open today to get all the homeless in, you know, to keep them warm. I'm like, enjoy the warming shelter that I started. You know, there's all these little bits and pieces of me around where people are still enjoying and they're loving it. And it's creating a good community. And yet they can't even look at me, you know? And at this point in time, it's like, it's okay. I've got my partner and a dear close circle of friends. We started holding a Monday night potlucks immediately in April of 2020, or actually March of 2020, where every single Monday, you know, everyone leave their home, their phones at home, their cell phones, and they come in and we have this incredible potluck, all strangers, people we didn't know, all walks of life. Mm-hmm. And now they're our network, you know, we're there, you know, through thick and thin. And, you know, and I've got a really good life and, you know, really good quality of life. But what's really sad, Danny, is I'm seeing a lot of these people, they've died. They have glioblastomas. They have cancers, turbo cancers, stroked out. I mean, it's one of our dear friends in those Monday nights is a paramedic and tells us, you know, when COVID struck, the ambulances were collecting dust. When the shot started, we couldn't keep up to it. And now today he's like, we've bought extra ambulances. We have more staff. And now we're 2-3 years after people having their last boosters and they're dropping dead. Because we've never been busier. It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
And so this is my feeling, is if the people did not have courage to stand up against the COVID lies originally, they're certainly not going to have the ability to stand up and say, I'm sorry today.
Right.
I mean, that'd be an extraordinary turnaround, because now you realize that you're responsible. You have some responsibility in where we are today. And every single one of these individuals, and I do pray for them. I do a lot more praying now than I've ever done before. I pray that they get over this. I pray that they recover. I pray that it doesn't shorten their lives. But the truth of the matter is if they got a shot and it was not a placebo, their lives are probably going to be shortened.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really messed up.
It's super messed up. Yeah. What I'm getting from what you're sharing, and this is one of my biggest lessons, is how I had been misusing the word friend. And how there's a difference between someone I know, someone I used to know, and what an actual friend is. And my lesson from what I call FOVID is I had way fewer friends than I had thought that I had.
Yeah, I mean, I had hundreds of friends and you know, well-liked on both sides of the political, you know, spectrum. And they got vicious and nasty, unbelievably vicious and nasty. And so I have just a tiny, tiny, tiny smattering of those friends that are left. And, you know, I have to be very frank. I don't let people into my inner circle that's like a fair weather friend.
Yeah.
You know, and they're out there. And I know, so I've got my inner circle. It's very small, tight, don't need a lot of good friends. Wonderful partner, Susan, of 17 years. And then I have another little circle of friends, and these guys are like, you know, you got to prove yourself. And if, you know, we're there for you. I mean, like, we are loyal. We will back you up. We'll drop everything. We'll be there for you. We've done that over and over again. And, you know, if you can't do the same, then okay, then you're on the outer circle, you know, because it's just, you know, that's where it is. And I don't need a ton of friends. And I'm, you know, I've got my garden, you know, and I'm planting things and, you know, getting out in nature. And I just really appreciate the small little things. And that's our lives. And I don't do a lot of socializing at all like I used to, because really, I don't feel like running into people that I once knew and thought I loved and were friends. It just takes the fun away. And I'm more of a homebody for sure. Definitely more of a homebody. But I have to say, I really love gardening and I love hummingbirds and bees, and that's my life.
So you mentioned when you went to take your oath, but instead you resigned and you let the city council know you have committed and are committing crimes against humanity. Justice will be served. Your feet will be held to the fire. Do you see that happening? How do you see that happening?
Well, I think what's happening now is that they are, whether they want to admit it or not, they're seeing the masks didn't work. They know social distancing didn't work. They're seeing people drop dead all around them. And so a few months ago, I went there at a public comment at the county supervisors meeting, and I just said, y'all see what's going on. You see the Parkinson's, the turbo cancers, the glioblastomas, all the neurological issues. I mean, the list, strokes, the heart attacks, people out there pickleball, dropping dead, bone after another, after another. And I said, and don't tell me that you're not seeing it. And this is on you. And I named them out by, I actually named all of them by this, each one of you. This is all on you. And these deaths and these injuries are all on you. And this is doing nothing more than just building the case against all of you. And you can retire, and some of you can move to another state. That's fine. But we will know where you are. And you're going to pay. In the end, you're going to pay. And so I think really what's happening is that all the evidence is just coming to the light, and we're seeing it very clearly. And at some point, these folks will be paying it. At the very least, Danny, at the very least, these folks will never be able to show their faces in public again. Because just like Fauci, that man can't go in the public. He can't go out in the public. And
Good.
he can't. Good. Very, got yeah, right. Good. So his life is also forever changed. So it's like, just imprison that mofo and make sure that he never goes out in the public. He's never safe out there again. And we're going to shame the hell out of him and make it so that he has to go, just stay wherever he has to stay in his little enclave of friends. But like, don't let him, roam freely. And ultimately, I think he will serve his time too. But it's just awful. And also, in the end, they're the ones who have to, talk to God. And so why did you do that? And I sleep well at night. I know every single day we try, every single day I try to just to make the planet a little bit better.
Do you, and I understand there's certainly, I mean, there's no question there will be a karmic rebalancing. These people cannot escape that. Do you see a version of this where the city councils, where the mayors who did enforce these unconstitutional mandates are either personally sued or like, do you see a version?
I think that at some point can happen. I think that, there's really been no economic recovery. People have completely lost their businesses and so on. I think that some of these people can be held responsible ultimately, because, this is the thing is that, and this is what I said to them, which is really important, is I had learned, there was a gentleman by the name of Leonard Hardell who had gone out there and finally proven to the World Health Organization that Agent Orange was cancer causing. And once they did that, they went out there and they notified every head of every chemical company saying, you got to stop spraying. And they didn't. And so when they didn't, they took them to world courts. And ultimately, in order for them to be proven to have committed a crime against humanity, there's only one question they had to ask, which is, what did you know by when? And these county supervisors and these city council members, I believe at some point we are going to be able to have business owners, perhaps even school children who have been psychologically, emotionally harmed, people who had their savings taken away or were closed down, whatever. I believe at some point they'll be able to go and take these county supervisors or city council members who are forcing these mandates onto us like they were law, and actually hold them accountable, and just simply say, what did you know by when? Because let me tell you, they can't sit there and say they didn't know, because we were going to the supervisor meetings and the city council meetings, whether it's through Zoom or out there knocking on the door during the meetings, like, hello, let us in, giving them all the information that today has now been proven accurate. So they can't sit there and pretend they didn't know. They knew. So I think it's gonna be years and years of this. It's not gonna be like just one year, it's all done and we go back. I think it's gonna be unraveling slowly but surely.
I appreciate that because I was very active here in Santa Fe, taking our gross mayor, governor to task, the city council, sending them links, sending them articles, doing all of that. I've saved all my emails in the hopes that people who've lost their businesses, who've lost loved ones, will go after them, and I can provide them with the evidence necessary to show that they did have knowledge.
Right, and I think that's paramount. I mean, that's the thing, is all you need is to show somebody who had a loss, could never ever get it back, and you've got all the evidence. They could actually go after them now. I just don't think people realize that, right? They could actually take them to court now. They could do it now.
That's, I'm similar to you. I'm a fighter. I'm a doer. I didn't take the shots. I didn't have a business that got shut down, so I don't have any legit
losses.
That's just
it. That's just it. So, I mean, I have losses, but not the kind of losses you can take to court. Like, you know, which is, of course, you can show quantifiably, economically, this is the harm that was done to me. So we just need somebody willing to do it.
Right. And I've had the same thought actually about geoengineering to move into that piece, because I know, like, when North Carolina was hit with the floods and everyone was saying, you know, we know it was weather modification. We know it was this plane flying at this time. My thought, and I'm no legal expert, is someone was flying that plane. Yeah. And someone made the choice to engineer the weather in such a way that led to loss and injury and death. And that person, whether they meant to or not, has to be held accountable. You know, my thought has been like, why don't we go after everyone who flies these planes? Just like we go after everyone who put the needles in people's arms, right? Because they use ignorant humans as body armor for their stuff. And if those humans start paying the price and say, no, we don't want to do your gross stuff, then maybe this can stop.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely does help. I mean, ultimately, we've got a couple different things going on with geoengineering, which was really surprising to me when I started Save Our Skies. I had always believed geoengineering was just these clandestine programs. You see the streaks in the sky, they're all, you know, we're being sprayed. Military, CIA, who knows? And shockingly, ultimately, I realized, and this is through Jim Lee and a whole team of people, actually, it's not just Jim's, a whole bunch of other folks, that really made it very clear to us, like, okay, there's storms happening. And we had a team of people from ClimateView who actually look at Helene. Now, they didn't find a cloud seed or anything like that. It was actually just this perfect storm of just two storms coming in and colliding over the Appalachia that was similar to 1916. 1916, they had a similar storm that was equally catastrophic, but it wasn't as big of a town. So it wasn't many people and buildings and stuff. So we didn't find that with Helene, which I was shocked by, because I just assumed it was, completely manufactured. But there's two different things here. We've got the clandestine programs, and really the clandestine programs ultimately, because I'm sure it's black ops budget and stuff like that, that's got to be addressed by like the Doge or by Bobby Kennedy or by Rubio or by Trump or somebody like, hey, stop funding these things and stop these programs. Now, that's who we were originally going after with Save Our Skies. We're more the clandestine programs. And I assumed the clandestine programs were the big streaks in the sky. Every single day you see them. Some days you do, some days you don't, depending if they're spraying or not. Well, then we start taking the whole geoengineering narrative that I've been familiar with for 15, 20 years, and I start putting together. I hired attorneys. We actually originally were going after the gag order. I was told that there was a gag order on weather reporters and NOAA, meteorologists. And I come to find out through our legal team, it's a huge constitutional team of attorneys from Houston, Texas, that there is no gag order. The gag order that this one iconic geoengineering figure has been talking about is referring to public employees, union, internal negotiation agreements and stuff like that. They had a gag order on their internal negotiations, not on weather modification reporting. So we were going to pursue that as a First Amendment violation, just, out the gate to start. And we come to find out that's not true. I was like, whoa, wait a second, right? So then we start looking into more of the narrative around the geoengineering story that I've been very familiar with. And it just started to fall apart really fast. And also I'm like, I can't take this to court. So I'm like, well, if it's not what we think it is, if not what we've been told, then what is it? Well, then we come to find out that in the late 1990s, 96, 97, through NATO, the jet fuel formula had been changed and into what's called a single-use fuel. So it could be for commercial airlines, it could be for military jets, it could be for tanks, it could be for helicopters. And so NATO is in charge of our military, or I should say our jet fuel, which is kind of weird. NATO's in charge of our fuel, but they are. Don't trust them whatsoever. And so that changed in the late 1990s. And then what happened was that cheap flights began, like really cheap, like JetBlue and blah, blah, blah. And also like these really cheap flights started. And so exponentially, the number of commercial flights started. So I never, ever, ever thought once it was commercial aviation at all. I also thought it was like, because I was told it was coal fly ash. They were spreading coal fly ash to dim the sun and this and that and poison us. And then more recently, I found out, well, coal fly ash, and there's either two different scenarios. Coal fly ash, which comes from the scrubbers of coal-powered plants. Once they clean them out, you have all this like ash, you know, it's hard to get rid of. And we were being told that coal fly ash is being used in the jet fuel or is being sprayed through nozzles. And when I really looked into it, Dan, it's like, well, wait a second. First of all, you can't put that stuff in jet fuel. I mean, the plane wouldn't be able to operate. It'd be like putting, you know, ash from your fireplace into your gas tank in your car. Your car would die. Right. It would sink, right? So it's not in the jet fuel. And I thought, well, it must be the aerial spraying. Well, then I'm actually, you know, realizing, and I was flying back from out of town a few weeks ago. And as we're flying, I see like this persistent contrail right next to my window. Like I could almost reach out and touch it. And I was like, yeah, there's no way they're spraying coal fly ash either. It's not in the jet fuel and it's not being sprayed. Why? The smallest amount of ash, like volcanic ash, if a plane hits that, it will seize up the engine. The engine will overheat and it will drop out of the sky like a rock. And so I realized there's no way anybody's spraying any coal fly ash anywhere, because you've seen like when there's been like volcanic eruptions in Iceland or somewhere. I mean, all total airports are grounded. Planes avoid it like the plague. I mean, even a minute amount of ash will destroy a plane's engine. So I'm like, there's no way they're spraying coal fly ash out anywhere. And if they were, planes would be dropping out of the sky all over the place. So that story didn't hold water. And when I looked to see over and over and over again, what's happening is that, and it was shocking to me, while it's spewing out metals and heavy metals in the jet fuel, and we're burning 1.5 million barrels of jet fuel, you know, per day. When the Clean Air Act, the last time that they addressed the Clean Air Act, and this has to do with all also the anti-geoengineering legislation going on in all the different states. Mm-hmm. They're like, okay, we don't want any more of these streaks in the sky. We want the geoengineering to stop. And they're calling it intentional geoengineering. Intentional geoengineering are like the clandestine programs, or let's say, cloud seeding programs that you can seed a hurricane and make it bigger and worse. But the in and out day onslaught of the streaks in the sky is the unintentional geoengineering, and that is commercial aviation. And so back in 1963 was the last time the Clean Air Act that they even the FAA or actually the EPA even looked at the Clean Air Act. They're like, yeah, there's streaks in the sky. Yeah, there's heavy metals, but just the price of doing business. Well, at that point in time, they had less than 1 million flights per year. Today, we have over 45 million flights.
But what is the rationale for adding heavy metals to jet fuel in the first place?
It's nanoparticulate matter. So they refine it. It's the most refined fuel, most regulated fuel out there. However, they do add a lot of additives, you know, to keep it so it doesn't spark, to keep it from freezing. There's all these different things to get, you know, to get better, you know, gas mileage, essentially. All this stuff is happening. So they have all these additives, but the truth of the matter is that they refine it, but there's still nanoparticulate matter that is like a kind of a graphene laminate. And within that is the soot and the sulfur and the heavy metals. And a lot of the heavy metals, like the aluminum, believe it or not, that is coming from the wear and tear of the plane. Right. I mean, shocking. So this, Danny, is where I started 2 years ago and where I am today is like, whoa, this is not what I expected. So we ended up adjusting. We started to see the anti-geoengineering legislation passing all the states, people thinking that, okay, the streaks in the sky are going to stop. Right. Now you can have anybody in those states and you're going to hear from them. The streaks have not stopped. Why? Right. Because they were addressing intentional geoengineering. But the problem is states have no authority 400 feet above them in the airspace. None. They have no authority. That is actually the FAA and then the EPA through the Clean Air Act. So the last time the Clean Air Act has been even touched or looked at was in 1963. So what we decided to do is Gen 7 and our Save Our Skies initiative is like, okay, this is what we're going to do is we're going to take the EPA, the California EPA and the FAA to court, including CARB, which is the California Air and Resource Board. And we're going to take them to the court to court for not updating the Clean Air Act and actually addressing the fact that all this commercial aviation is essentially, it's heavy metals, but what's far, 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 far worse, it's dimming the sun. We're losing our sun. And at the current rate, we're not going to have any sun, and what's going to happen to the whole planet. So to start, in order to take them to court, what we've had to do, and this has taken us months, is we've had to work on what's called a petition for rulemaking. Jim Lee, we have hired him as our consultant from Climate Viewer because he's just a walking encyclopedia. He's helped us put together all the references, all the citations, all the court cases, everything we possibly, all the studies, everything we need. And what we do is we put that together and we send that off as a petition for rulemaking to the EPA saying, hey, you're derelict in duty. You failed your duties. You've got to update the Clean Air Act. We've got to deal with this. This is a serious problem. And, you know, there's also something called the public trust doctrine, which means you have a job, a duty to ensure clean air, clean water, clean soil in perpetuity for generations to come. And you've also failed that. So that is to give them a chance to say, oh gosh, you're right. Let's change our standards. Let's start testing. Let's start dealing with this. Let's get to the root of the problem. And if they don't respond that way within 6 months to a year, then we can take them to court. But we cannot go to court directly right now unless we've exhausted all other avenues. If we've not exhausted that avenue, the judge will throw it out. So the reason why this is so, so, so important is that only 20% of the world population has ever flown. Mm-hmm. And right now, the vast majority of flights are in America and they're short haul flights, which means they're like 3 hours or less. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the world, they're getting more income and there's more flights. There's more airliners. I mean, that number is rising exponentially. So we're addressing the heavy metals and it's bad. It's not good, especially in the urban areas. There's something called aviation induced mortality, which there's tons of people dying from just commercial aviation alone. Heavy metals aren't good. However, the cargo ships burning their dirty diesel bunker fuels far, far, far worse. Mm-hmm. And ground transportation is even worse. And even worse than that is all the pesticides they're spraying. But the sun is still being dimmed and it's going to get worse every single year. Today is the best day we're going to have compared to next year and the next year and the next year. And the way that we have to turn this around essentially is to look at the short haul flights, which are like 75 to 80% of the flights, mm-hmm. and actually get us out of the planes for the short haul flights. Get into like, you know, into like bullet, magnetic bullet trains, really reinvest. And that will be like a 30, 35 year process.
Wow.
It's not what I thought.
Right. Wow.
But the thing is, I say to people, like, look at you guys. So many people are mad at me now in the geoengineering world. They're like, oh my God, Renee, you've turned. Who got to you? I'm like, look at guys. I'm taking this to court and I'm doing this pro se, by the way. I'm using a former CHD California attorney. We've hired her as our consultant. She's teaching me how to litigate in court. Mm-hmm. I will be the attorney, though I'm not an attorney. It's called pro se. And she's going to help make sure that, you know, all the technicalities are fine and, you know, we're dotting every, you know, I and crossing every T. But I'm going, so I'm going to do that. So I have to raise millions of dollars. I'm going to take them to court. I'm like, my name is on this. And if my name is on this, I'm going to make sure that we have the best chance of winning. The old geoengineering narrative that I believed in for years and years is completely just, it's not what we're seeing. The constant streaks we're seeing, and it's been proven to me, and I'll explain how. That is not the case to take to the court. Mm-hmm. What I've realized is, yeah, there's clandestine programs. You got to come at that from a different avenue, different route. But when it comes to those streaks in the sky, the whitening of the skies, the blocking out of the sun, it's commercial aviation.
Interesting.
And I want to talk about this as important. So last year, this is a game changer. It was kind of revolutionary. We had a guy come along named Jeff Ray. Mm-hmm. And this is when I still was not where I am today a year ago. I mean, I was just starting to kind of go, whoa, wait, what's going on? But he said, Renette, I see what you're doing with Save Our Skies. I want to tell you a little bit about myself and I want to assist you. He goes, I used to be in the Navy. I was working on an aircraft carrier. I'm a meteorologist. My job was to essentially look at what's called the radiosonde data. And what that is there's people around the world who every 12 hours, they step out with this little thing, this contraption called the radiosonde. You know, it's connected to a weather balloon and they let it go up and it goes all the way through the troposphere into the stratosphere and it collects all of the data, right? The humidity and the barometric pressure and the moisture and the particulate matter, all that stuff. And then they put it into this chart and then he can identify in this chart, and it's gonna be like extreme cold. So it's like 45 degrees or colder, Celsius or Fahrenheit. He says, my job is to look at this radiosonde data and identify where in the atmosphere the jets could take off the aircraft carrier, fly at a certain level, and come back without what's called a persistent contrail behind them, because that would notify the enemy where our aircraft carrier was.
does it for the first half of my juicy conversation with Renette Senem. As you are inspired to scope out the second half, you can find that on both my Locals and my Patreon websites. Those addresses are dannycats.locals.com and patreon.com/dannycats. At both platforms, for as little as $5 a month, you get access to all of my second half conversations, plus oodles of bonus content, including my super fun hand-drawn product line. So choose whichever platform feels most aligned for you and join us on one or both of the platforms for the rest of this conversation. Before we sign off, last reminder to sign up for my newsletter at dannycats.com. And thank you so much for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that every word matters, that you are omniscopic amazingness. I will see you over on the Locals and the Patreon. Have a rockin' day.